We had one question left on chapter 12. One question, the last question. And it was, what are those greater gifts of verse 31? And if I could reread 28 through 31. And God has appointed in the church first apostles, second prophets, third teachers, then miracles and gifts of healings, helps, administrations, various kinds of tongues. All are not apostles, are they? All are not prophets, are they? All are not teachers, are they? All are not works of miracles, are they? All are not gifts of healing, do they? All do not speak with tongues, do they? All do not interpret, do they? In verse 31, but earnestly desire the greater gifts, and I show you a still more excellent way. Now, our question was, what are those greater gifts or best gifts? And any thoughts on that? I know y'all, in my mind, and you read a lot of commentaries, they kind of deal in this chapter. In my mind, as I've read all three of these chapters that deal with gifts and that sort of thing, 12, 13, 14, in my mind, it says earnest desire to greater or best gifts. To me, that deals with the gifts of prophecy and the gifts of interpretation. And we'll see that as we move into especially chapter 14.
Mm-hmm. Verse 6, revelation, mm-hmm. knowledge, prophecy, mm-hmm. teaching, mm-hmm. you know, those things.
And then that's the first part of that, earnestly desire to best or greater gifts. And we'll see that those things of prophecy interpretation, in contrast to the value that they were placing on tongues, speaking, is the point that they're going to make later on in these following chapters. But that next part of that verse, and I show you a still more excellent way. Now, that is the lead-in, okay, to chapter 13. And that is the more excellent way. And I say that because, in the way I'm looking at this, and we'll see that towards the end of 13, that what is the more excellent way? Yeah, it's love. We got that. But when these gifts will end, and we'll see that in the latter part of 13, the gifts are going to end. And what are you going to be left with?
Faith.
One, yeah, faith, faith, hope, and love. And you'll have those things that are going to motivate you. Those things that are going to inspire you to live the life that you should. And he's preparing them for this eventuality that the gifts will end. So, and from that point on, you've got the gospel and your written word, and when the New Testament is completed, all the apostles have written down, and all the prophets have written down, everything they want to write down, you've got all you need to be right with God, okay? The gospel, the instructions, all that sort of thing. So that's my view of that last verse. So think about, especially as you read chapter 14, the idea of prophecy and interpretation of it, of those tongues.
Doug, does the earnestly desire imply that if they didn't have a gift and they desired it, that they could possibly get it through the Holy Spirit?
Earnestly desire is a phrase we're going to see also appear coming up a couple of times in 14. And for those who had the gifts, sometimes we also see in 14 that there's a request there in one spot where an individual had the tongues, and there's a request there that they also have the gift, another gift. So you could have multiple gifts for one person. Now, in this one here, earnest desire the greater gifts, and that's what he's getting at. Not that those gifts are the single gifts that are the best gifts. Like we saw, some of them were getting the idea that tongues was the only thing. In other words, remember it talks about the body? If the whole body was a hand, where would the body be? If the whole body was a heart, where would the whole body be? See, that's why you have all the members of it working together for the common good. So, earnest desire of the greater gifts. Yes, because they benefit, say, towards the common good and towards the edification, okay, building up of the body.
Why wasn't that obvious to the Corinthians?
Well, there was a lot of things should have been obvious to the Corinthians.
Well, but,
is it not?
But
all right.
It's the same today. Obviously, the Pentecostal group and the speaking in tongues is a very celebrated type of a quote gift, you know, to have is from what I understand anyway. So, but it seems to be the same here, tongues. But obviously, hearing someone speak in German really doesn't do me any good.
It's a clanging cymbal.
It's a
tune without,
but
you know,
having some interpretation and some prophecy would be, this guy's, let's keep him around, you know.
Yes. But again, we also saw last time that even though you may not have this gift of tongues or this gift of prophecy, there's other gifts that were given, and it all builds, again, for the body. All right? And that was association with the body we talked about, the physical body.
And earnest desiring seems like a heart attuned to glorifying God in whatever way you can. So, like you were saying, you know, they could pray, or they could, you know, they desire, and the Holy Spirit may give them that.
See, and the church here needed this kind of encouragement. Again, I mentioned before, this is first generation. And all the problems and baggage they're carrying with from their previous religion. These are not kids that grew up. These are adults that changed. That's a hard thing to do. So earnestly desire these gifts, because if you earnestly desire it, that means you earnestly want to use it for its right purpose too, hopefully. And all that's, again, for the common good. And that's how you're going to keep people saved. And to have the desire to tell others, say, of what's best for them in reference to eternity and to change. That's motivation. That's motivation to have the earnestly desire these things.
Question. It was still by the man home of the apostles' hands,
yes.
Right? So
mm-hmm.
if they desired it, it's not just going into their closet and praying to God
and
coming down on them.
It had to be that way, and they couldn't give it one to another. But the apostle's coming, didn't he? See?
Yes.
All right, he came the first time, and he comes the second time.
And do you think that the apostles could discern if it was because Peter was able to tell about, Simon?
That's an interesting question. When the apostle laid their hands on a certain person, okay, did they know what was going to happen? Okay, it was at an earnestly desire of the apostle, okay? To have a certain gift of that person? I don't know that. I don't know that. All I know is...
Tell the heart of Simon.
I don't know. Maybe God, through inspiration to the apostle, said, this man lay his hands and I'll distribute the gift. See? Mm-hmm. I don't know. Mm-hmm. But the point is, the apostles had to give the gift. Or you're back to, you know, miraculously doing it. Now, so that was just the idea. And that's our lead in to chapter 13. Still more excellent way. Again, the way, what's the way while you have the gifts, okay? And what's the way when the gifts leave, which is us today, isn't it? All right. Now, in chapter 13, which is called the love chapter, are there three types of love?
Yes.
There's an intimate love and a compassionate love. And what's that other one?
Caring
love, isn't there? Now, in your reading of chapter 13, which one are we talking about? Caring love, aren't we? Okay, which is that one another thing. See? Which is really the whole Corinthians problem. The idea of considering one another. See? And arrogance reflects a non-consideration, and strife results, and all that sort of thing. Or my gift is better than yours. All that. So, we're talking about a caring love as we come into chapter 13. Now, hello. into that caring love, in question number one, the word love is actually used how many times? How many times is it implied? And we talked about marking before. And as you read a section of Scripture, say, or you read this 13 verses here, you know, there's a word pops up quite a bit and implied quite a bit. So I wonder if that's a topic, at least a major topic, all right? And, of course, you read other versions, you may see other words than love. But that charity is another word you'll see if you like the King James. But even charity would pop up. The point is, when God placed those words there by inspiration, it was for a purpose. And that's, you can see a point that he's dealing with, whether in a section of this whole chapter. Now, real quick, did he write chapter 13 as chapter 13 when he wrote the letter? No, okay. All right, it's just a letter going along. I don't know if there was a paragraph break or not, all right? But that's why we see, like the last one leads into this more excellent way. Now, how many times is it about, is it said? Okay. Yeah.
I put 11 because I counted
it. You know, yeah.
It is implied.
Yeah. Well, there's eight or nine. Okay.
No, it's okay.
I got implied about 12 times, but
yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
But the point is, that's a lot. And that's all I'm trying to stress here is the idea that it's a major topic. Major topic meaning they had to learn it? Yes. Yes. Did they need to apply it? Yes. That's what he wants them to do. In their daily life, interacting with one another.
Well, just a comment, because I wasn't sure exactly what you meant by implied, because I came up with about 21.
Okay. All right. Yeah. And again, my aim here is just to show the number of times. The number of times. And I don't know. I don't guess there's anywhere else that you can get a group of 13 scriptures that has this, you know, this many, okay, applications of that word. And again, we're talking caring love, aren't we? All right. Consideration love, I guess you could say, too. Yeah. So, and we've already talked about it, too, what kind of love it is. Now, as you go through the chapter 1, 2, and 3, in question 3, there's a absence of love in 1, 2, and 3. And there's when love is not present in 4 through 7. Think about that. The absence of love and when love is present. Kind of a you know, opposite ends. So what happens when love is absent? Well, that's 1, 2, and 3. And when this love is absent in the application, in the usage of their gifts, what is it in 1? If I speak of tongues as a man angel, do not have love, I have become a noisy gong and a clanging cymbal. I don't know if you know people that have been in the band and they just start with an instrument, or you get a little 2 or 3 year old, one of them little xylophone things, you know, they beat on it, all right? Of course, they get the right end to beat on first, all right? But they beat on it. Well, is that? Oh, it sounds more. Oh, I like the sound of that. Yeah. All right. See, but the point is that it doesn't seem any rhyme or reason to it.
It's a nothingness.
And then he just takes an everyday thing here and says, "Well, it's kind of a worthless if you speak in tongues without this other consideration." See, then it's worthless. Now, in verse 2. If I have the gift of prophecy and know all mysteries and all knowledge, and if I have all faith so as to remove mountains, but do not have love, I am nothing. The idea of worthless again, isn't it? See, I have these things, but I've got to have the application in the right situation with the right attitude. All right? And number 3 is an interesting point. And if I give all my possession to feed the poor, and if I deliver my body to be burned, but do not have love, it profits me nothing. and made an application here, and I guess you'd say to our charity. If I give my possessions to the poor, or if I help the poor, when I walk away from that, when I'm given to the poor, what do I think about myself? What do I think about the other people? Or which one do I think about first? Myself? Or do you think about the help you give to others? See, first thing you're thinking about is your motive to do that. Or, and I give to others, is it, well, I did this, okay, I can get a good write-off of my taxes for that one. It's self first. So, and that's the whole thing, you think about others. Why do I give to others to help? All right? And even to the point of giving all you have available. All right? So he made a practical issue of it. And you're not going to ask about the body to be burned, are you?
Right. No, but you know, and it's
I got an answer, but
it's funny. I mean, they still get the help. If you give all that you have, they still get the help. But God views it, it's vain. You get no credit, you know. God looks at it as not a good thing for you. They may get help, but you're not going to be profited. Or
well, it's kind of like you know, in Malachi, where it deals with the priests giving the sacrifices. Mm-hmm. They gave the sacrifices, but God didn't accept it. See, because they weren't the proper site with the proper attitude towards the sacrifice. And would your governor accept that kind of animal? No, the government would say, well, why in the world are you giving it to God? Say of the sacrifice. So the attitude we have about things reflects on how we choose. So he takes that here and he relates it again back to their gift and how they were using it. Now,
I got a question.
Yes, sir.
You're not advocating that an indifference to giving because of whatever reason is a sin then, right? You're not advocating that. I know here it's talking about mm-hmm. if they did it out of a profit for themselves or they did it mm-hmm. out of a self-service, but you're not talking about, well, let's say I've got a business and I give to somebody and I do it out of an indifference for tax write-off. Mm-hmm. Indifference is not the problem. No. It's the self-service, right?
Yes. Let's take the tongues. Well, they're speaking in tongues. They're taking whatever was prophesied, whatever it is, and is doing it, mm-hmm. right? They're doing it. Where's the problem?
It's the self-service.
There's selfishness, the attitude they have, the reflected to others, that sort of thing. So that attitude was their problem, okay? Mm-hmm. All right, good point. Now, that's in the absence of that. It reflects, it's a gonging symbol, no distinction in sounds. It's a worthless sort of thing. And so now we turn into question number four through seven. How love should act towards others who don't have gifts or different gifts is shown in how many points in verses 4-7. Now this is when love is present. That's how it wasn't, okay, useless and worthless, and okay, even though you did it, all right? But now what happens when this love, this consideration, this caring love is present? Of course, if they take all these next few verses to heart, we could have had 1 Corinthians could have been, a third of the chapters. Mm-hmm. All right. So, or a lot shorter book. So, when we look at 4-7, love is what? Patient. Well, you wait for others, don't you? There's maybe some sacrifice or long suffering involved in there. All right? Love is kind. If you're kind to others, are you harsh with them? Are you bitter with them? Is it cutting language? See? Are you considerate of where they're at in their life? See? Or in their spirit, added towards spiritual gifts, or towards meats. See, are you kind towards that, or sacrificed animals, and where they're at in their maturity? Is not jealous. Well, they had this problem, didn't they? See, and that kind of reflects the idea of the attention again you give to others. Now, does not brag and is not arrogant. Well, there's a word we've seen before, arrogant. See, by inspiration, we've seen that word multiple times. So it's not that way. Not that way. Again, when you consider others. All right? Now, when it is present, it does not act unbecomingly. Again, that word may deal the idea that you're not rude. You choose a time and place. You know, if you want to talk to someone, that's consideration, isn't it? See? All right? It does not seek its own. Well, what's another word for that? Selfishness, isn't it? Okay. Selflessness is what we should be. But selfish is what they had. And it is not provoked. Does one come to anger easily? Is one easily offended? You know, I don't know if you call it a chip on your shoulder or something, but you're just ready to spring. All right? Does it consider if something happens to you, or someone says something or does something, do you make up their motives? If something is said, well, why'd you say that? You know, in a calm, kind atmosphere. Or do you spring back in retribution for what they did or something else that's not good? Say that doesn't build, you know, doesn't encourage others. So we need to think, and that anger thing can quickly stir too. Quickly. And then all of a sudden you're off on another topic, anger and strife, and all right, you're off the subject already when that happens. Especially if you've got something in your hand. All right. Now, does that take into account a wrong suffered? What's that? Holding a grudge, isn't it?
Keeping a list.
Okay? Keeping a list. All right? Women only do that. Men don't, do they? Everyone does. Okay? To one way or another. You remember things. And it's if God held a grudge against us for our trespasses, well, we'd be in trouble, wouldn't we? Good point. He remembers.
But they're covered.
But it's dealt with, isn't it? Okay? So this idea of holding a grudge is something you need to resolve. Because all it'll do is magnify in your mind. And it may be much bigger than it should have been to start with. And it definitely will affect your relationship one to another, won't it? Okay? Marriage, personal relationships, whatever it is. And I don't know if this occurred, but imagine in this Corinthian church where one was saying, I had the better gifts, and you're worthless, telling the other person. Well, there's an arrogance there, but what about the other person who was told you're worthless? See, they might hold a grudge, who knows, right? So it works both ways, doesn't it? We know the Apostle Paul, he had some bad things said about him, okay? Again, imputing his whole apostleship and on and on. And you can see in his life, he didn't hold a grudge. Now, he was firm, and when he talks to them, and you need to be firm, fair and firm, but he didn't hold that grudge. Because he knew God did not desire that. Because his idea, too, was just like God's. For the good of the individual. For their always, always, their relationship with God comes first. Always. Okay? Now.
Don't you find that if it's really, you know, I think the Lord deals with if a brother sins against you in Matthew 18, the way to go about that. Now, there are times when if someone just says a word, I mean, just let it go, you know, if it's not important, well, if it's not, but if it's really a sin against you, or you have a, you know, and there's a real problem between brethren, Matthew 18, the Lord tells them how to deal with it.
And in Matthew 18, like you're saying, the first thing, you go individual, one-on-one, you know, and I tell you what, we all do. We choose the wrong facial expression. We choose some wrong words sometimes. It just doesn't come out the way we intended. Okay? And I'll say to myself, boy, I'm glad God, you know what I meant. All right? I didn't mean that the way it came out. Well, the way, you know, once you push that send on Facebook, it's gone, isn't it? All right? So proofread that pretty well, all right? Especially go to everybody, all right? But the same idea. And if you made a mistake, you know, correct it as fast as you can.
All right? That's long-suffering. Sometimes, you know, mates and brethren or people of the world, friends, whatever, I mean, they just might be in a bad mood that day and they may just, you know, jump on something or be in a, you know, say something that's sort of out of their character. Let it go.
Sometimes it's not a bad mood, just there's so much going on and you don't give that question or that situation enough attention. It may, oh, that was a big point to the other person, but a minor blip to you. Mm-hmm. Say, or they're reaching out, whatever it is. So just a matter of step back a second, be a little patient with it, whatever the situation is. Children can do that, do you? Develop patience, long suffering. When they get older, right, Dawn?
Mm.
Okay. Prize them when they're young, all right? Now, they can also be great pride to you, too. Now, in verse 6, does not rejoice in unrighteousness. I don't know. This is apparently a problem they had. It may be a problem we have. But when you're doing things not right, if you're doing sinful actions, do you find pleasure in that? Here's, you should not. So that has a lot of application, a good general term there. So you shouldn't have those kind of pleasurable items. So whether it's in revenge to someone, oh, I'm glad I got, I was a good one. All right, I got them good on that one. See? No pleasure in those sinful actions, whatever it is. Okay? Now, and it says, but rejoices with the truth. Do we find pleasure when we do things right? Righteous living. When you found, when a person in front of you walks away or something and they leave $5 in change, it fell on the ground right there. Do you have some, is there some, that's just, you have pleasure in picking that up and chasing them down? Giving their $5, okay? They left their groceries. Do you run out in the parking lot after them? I've done that. See? There's, I'm sure there's some other things. But not to mention, if you find pleasure in helping someone know the truth, is there pleasure in that or satisfaction in that? Yeah. You taught your child for years, you know, and finally they say, yes, I believe. Let's fulfill the gospel. There's pride in that. There's pleasure in that. Okay? Now, again, this is opposite here of unrighteous actions. Now, in verse 7, he bears all things. What's that? Bear all things. Maybe patience. Maybe I've been wronged. What do? I just, like we just said a while ago, you just kind of take it and move on. All right, without holding a grudge, without looking for vengeance. Sometimes just bear things and move on. Okay? And that's usually something said or something. Now,
you bear up under it, you know, too. You don't allow those things to bring you to discouragement or to non-service. So many people leave the Lord, you know, but they don't bear up under it. The hardships.
Well, let's take Paul here. What thing did he bear physically? Yes, yes. What did he bear verbally? I can understand the Judaizers getting after him, but his own brethren getting after him. See? Cutting things.
You know that happens.
Yes, it does. All right? And sometimes you just let it go. Or you bear it. Or bear it without revenge. All right? And isn't this, I guess, a good rule for everyone, isn't it? If you're going to get along with people. See? And do the right things. Now, and believes all things. Well, that's kind of like the idea you give people a benefit of the doubt sometimes. Well, that's not in their character. They're not that way. See? Benefit of the doubt.
Sometimes there's people, it's like you said, it's not in their character. It is in their character. You know what I mean? Not real bad, but like the way they talk or something, mm-hmm. as far as how they say things, and that, you know, they mean it certain ways, and you know that, you know?
Yes, 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 yes.
Not bad, but you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm. And again, this is all this relationships here about love, isn't it? Okay. Consideration, caring love. Mm-hmm. Now, And last point is enduring all things. Hopes, endures, believes. And endures all things, that's pretty clear. Okay? And all things, there's a lot of circumstances you think you've been through, but there's many you haven't. You haven't seen it, you've never seen it all. It's amazing. And so you endure those things. Now, in question 5, we're going to start a section here, like I started with, the idea that when these gifts go away, what are you going to be left with? Well, hold on, what am I going to do? I can't see. But when these gifts go away, you're going to be your own intellect. The written word, you're going to have to get into it. See, you've got the Old Testament, New Testament. You know, there were writing the Gospels at this time. Some were written, some weren't. See, so it's still being revealed. But you know what? Corinthians, you know what? Ephesians and Romans and you people in Jerusalem, those gifts are going to end because we apostles are going to die one way or another. We're going to die. But you're going to have what all you need, you know, in reference to eternity. Now, so we start a little section here on this, and he's starting to tell them that. Love never fails, verse 8. But if there are gifts of prophecy, they will be done away. Uh-oh. If there are tongues, they will cease. If there is knowledge, it will be done away. So that verse, that may strike them. Maybe they didn't know that. I don't know, but now they're getting it. You people have split your congregation, almost. You people have caused strife. You people have caused, you know, error in your thinking. All these gifts that you take great pride in, they're going to go away. And what are you going to be left with? One another. So, and he does, and he keeps going with those points coming up in the next few verses. Verse 9, for we know in part, and we prophesy in part. When the perfect comes, that perfect there could be the complete, something's complete, okay, as contrast in part, the partial will be done away. And now he illustrates this idea. When I was a child, I used to speak as a child, think as a child, reason as a child, but when I became a man, when I grew up, when you matured, I did away with childish things. And verse 12, for now we see in a mirror dimly, yes, but then face to face. Now I know in part, but then I shall know fully, just as I've also been fully known. He's telling them here by representations and direct words that these gifts are going away. Now don't be scared of that. Because as I'm writing this to you, and the writings that we have, you're going to have all the instruction necessary to live righteous lives. See? Just as they had in the Old Testament, they had all they needed to live by. You're going to have all you need. All you need. And he goes through these different illustrations here on that. And you see the idea of a child. Does a child, once they grow up and they become a man or a woman, do you revert back? I mean, does the time go back? You shouldn't, should it? See? So we're going to mature. We're going to mature in the instructions, just like the instructions given here in this Corinthian letter. You know, no doubt that made its way around to the other congregations. See? Spread around by however it was spread around. Reading the letters, copies of it, we have it today. So those instructions on how we worship, on how we deal with one another, how we discipline in our ranks. All right? And again, the attitude we have. So he told them that sort of thing. And at the end of this, in Numbers 7, what teaching were the Corinthians to learn from this chapter? What did they learn?
Love is the greatest gift I have.
Love is the great, that's the enduring thing, isn't it? Okay?
And without it, they would be just a bunch of noise.
And that's why you say in 13, but now abide faith, hope, love. These three, but the greatest of these is love. Faith? What does faith promote in you? I was thinking about that. And a faith promotes in my mind trust. Trust in whatever it is. I'm faithful the car is going to operate. The steering wheel is going to work. I got faith that God's going to be true to His promises. See, I got faith that the apostle is writing, his writings are from God directly. And I have them.
Just to do His will.
Yes. Yeah. Trust in that. Now, what's hope? I was thinking expectation. I'm expecting something, aren't I? I'm hoping for it. Is it a real hope? If you believe, if you trust, see, then there is a heaven and there is a hell. So hope gives you that expectation. Now, okay, I've got a trust and expectation, but what keeps all that moving forward? What's the motivation for all this? Love, isn't it? Caring love. All right? Do I care about what God thinks about me? Yeah. All right? That's caring love. That's what He thinks about me. Do I care about what I think about Him? Yes. See? Now, I'm reflecting. Same thing. You do it to the least of these, you do it to me. Do we care about what Jesus thinks? Do we care about what Paul thinks? Do we care? See? So it's all care, isn't it? All right?
Did you say it's the application of the faith and the hope that you have?
Sure.
I mean, that's the, it's it is the greatest of the three because it's the application, it's the product of your faith and your hope. Your love shown to the brethren that you have shown to God. That's why it's the most important. It is the work that your faith and your hope produces.
Is faith an attitude? Is hope an attitude? What keeps it all moving in the right direction, according to here? Love, doesn't it? Pulls it all together. It's a glue, I guess you'd say. Say.
The first is love God, and then love your neighbor.
Mm-hmm.
So it's caring love towards God, but we... we can glorify God because we reverence Him and fear Him because of what He's done for us.
So in this chapter, we dealt with the idea of the absence of love, the presence of love, and the duration. Say, okay, of love. Okay, caring. All right, that went to another thing. Now, love is the attitude that we must and will use for motivating for the common good. Love should be the controlling factor for usage of gifts and in life. And love is selfless. It does not depend on the other's action, does it? Does it depend on or reaction? Does it? Yeah. But we need to think about that, don't we? That this idea of reacting, say vengeance. So we think about that. Now, if another person shows me that they don't care about God, and you one witness, two witnesses, say, and they don't want to straighten up in a reasonable approach, well, you withdraw, don't you? Is that love? Yes, yes. In our language today, what kind of love is that? Tough. Hopefully, it's correcting love because we've seen that that person who was sinning, who was withdrawn from, returned, didn't he? See, in the 2 Corinthians letter. He responded. That's God's way. All people don't respond to withdrawal. But I've done what God's prescribed to do. Okay? All right? Now, that's the love chapter. Now, if we look at 14... let me back up a second. Are these 13 is used at weddings, right? Mm-hmm. Is it appropriate? Caring love? Sure. Sure is. But again, context is not a wedding. Context is not a wedding. But it certainly emphasizes certain things, doesn't it? Okay? So be aware of that. And we'll begin. Please read this next, a long chapter, but it's well worth it. And again, look at the prophecy and interpreters as opposed to tongues. All right? Thank you very much.